Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight, we talk about how to use neuroscience to help children with ADHD, autism, and sensory processing disorders. And my guest this evening is Dr. Varlisha Gibbs, Chair and Associate Professor of the Master's Program of Occupational Therapy at Wellesley College in Delaware. Tonight, Dr. Gibbs will help us to take charge of our lives by providing kid-friendly lessons to teach parents, therapists, educators, and children about their brain and body so that they can build needed skills to help them stay focused, managing their senses, and controlling their emotions. It is a pleasure to welcome Dr. Gibbs to help us to take charge of our lives on WDIY. Welcome, Dr. Gibbs.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Gibbs, what inspired you to write this book, which is a wonderful workbook called Self-Regulation and Mindfulness? What do you think caused you to write it?
Well, I've been an occupational therapist for over 16 years, and my primary focus when I before academia and when I was working in a clinic, I worked a lot with families. I opened up my doors to various diagnoses, various conditions and age ranges when I was in New Jersey. And what ended up happening was that we found that a lot of the families that were coming to us were in need for children that had ADHD or autism. And then there was a group of children that had a big question mark on them where they didn't have a diagnosis. We didn't exactly know what was happening with them. But it's something that, as an occupational therapist, we know as sensory processing disorder.
And when you say sensory processing, what exactly are you referring to?
So think about, you know, your body as a highway. You know, we have various roads going to and from our brain. It's really what our nervous system is in charge of, taking that information from our body to then be processed in your brain and make sense of it to use it. And then we often, after that, we'll have a response or a behavior. Well, if you think about, a highway getting jammed and having a traffic jam, sometimes, getting to that destination may take a little longer, or it just may not happen. It's just not as efficient. So that's similar to what happens with sensory processing disorder, where you may have a child or an adult that has trouble making sense of that information coming into their body from the environment and being able to use it appropriately and have appropriate responses.
Could you give us an example of a child or teenager that you may have worked with that would help us to understand sensory processing?
Yes. So there's varying types, just like anything. You know, people are unique, and so how it presents will be unique for that person. But I'll give you a couple examples. You may have a child that has hypersensitivity to certain senses, such as sound or touch or taste. So I've had, specifically, I can talk about a child that was extremely sensitive to sensory input. So coming into the classroom or even into the gym for therapy, they would often try to find a tight space to be alone and to get away from distraction that may be underneath a table, covering their ears, going into the cubby in the classroom, which these behaviors and reactions are really, they're impeding upon everyday function. So that same child would have trouble with certain foods, you know, and the parents really struggle with what to feed the child and what different, having variations in the food because they would only eat certain types. And with that, there was also aggressive behavior and also not being able to sleep appropriately and challenges with potty training even at an older age. And so these responses are natural neurological responses in the body. However, their bodies are overreacting and over-responding to sensory input. On the other end, I've had several children, and one in particular, that really, really enjoyed getting a lot of input from the environment. I had one child that would do what we call self-injurious behavior. So while the other child didn't like people to touch them, they didn't like certain textures, this child actually really enjoyed deep input. So, you know, he would run and slam himself against the floor, you know, sometimes banging his head, really risk-taking type of behaviors to the point where he actually did injure himself a couple of times because his body really, really enjoyed a lot of input. He would get an adrenaline release, if you will, or endorphin release from getting sensory stimulation. So he, you know, would enjoy various textures for eating, different spicy foods, really intense flavors. And so he would be a child that is really what we would call hyporesponsive to sensory input. So he would need a lot more stimulation than the other child I described. And then I've had a few children that have had trouble with their motoric system. So they may present as clumsy. I had one child that would sit on the edge of her desk, dangling her feet. When it was time for circle time, where they sit on the floor to receive a lesson, she would lie on her friends. She would frequently stand up when they needed her to sit down. And they thought she had ADHD. And the doctor and the psychologist that she went to, they didn't want to give her that diagnosis because it just didn't fit. And so when I evaluated her, I identified her as having sensory processing disorder, and really that being a sensory motor dysfunction for her. And so her body wasn't allowing her to be able to sit and attend in a way that they wanted her to do in a school environment. So she appeared to have ADHD, which wasn't the case for her. So those are, you know, three major examples of what you may see with a child with sensory processing disorder. And I would say they're kind of extreme. You know, there's always variations in the middle where it may not be obvious that the child is having trouble with different sounds because they're not going underneath the table like my friend was and covering their ears. But it could be distracting them in a way that they're not able to participate efficiently.
So how do you help teachers and parents to deal with this? And your book, by the way, is very wonderfully well-organized, Self-Regulation and Mindfulness, over 82 exercises and worksheets for sensory processing disorder, ADHD, and autism spectrum disorder. So how do you help teachers and parents to deal with these children so that they can make the most of their lives and their learning?
Well, for me, the first step, which is usually the most challenging for all parties involved, is the education piece. But it's so important that we find a way to have these discussions that allows the parents to really understand that, you know, how your nervous system works and that the child is having challenges with that. And it's really nothing that they did in utero when they were carrying their baby, or I've had parents ask me if they didn't swaddle them the right way when they were infants. We're just all wired differently. You know, I'm wired differently than you are, and that's just a natural occurrence. And when I say wired, I like to explain to them what that means, you know, neurologically. And we hear that word neuro, and it sounds scary, you know. So,
right. And Dr. Gibbs, I just want to let people know if they've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. And my guest this evening is Dr. Felicia Gibbs, author of Self-Regulation and Mindfulness. And let's go on and talk about how you help parents to get to understand and teachers deal with this.
Mm-hmm. So, I was mentioning the education piece, and the first step is really providing an understanding of those neurological foundations, but at a level that's comfortable for everyone. And I, too, even though I have training in this field, I like to talk about it at the basic level because it just makes sense to me. And so having those conversations about how your body naturally processes information from your environment, and then what can go wrong, you know, what can go wrong with our children. And I like to use examples of ourselves because we all have dysfunction at times. If you have the flu, you know, you have a cold, you didn't get enough sleep, you didn't get enough to eat, you will certainly have different reactions that you may not be proud of or may not be supporting your everyday needs when you're in those moments. Unfortunately, for some of our children, it happens a little more often for them that they're not able to function at that level. And so the education piece is first. And then secondly, I like to provide them with basic strategies that they can do. You know, in my field of occupational therapy, we provide a wealth of information because we're holistic. So we may give information on what we call a sensory diet. These are activities for the body, sensory-based activities that the child should perform every day. Unfortunately, sometimes we give a little, you know, too much information, pages of, you know, information. That's really great, but is it going to be utilized by that teacher, by that parent? And so my goal is to give them basic things they can do initially without pressure. I don't need them to feel like they have homework, and then when I see them again, I don't want them to think that they failed at that. And so, you know, giving them basic things that they can incorporate in their daily life, things that they're already doing, but they can enhance it for their child. And to also, you know, have that child be part of the process. I've had two-year-olds that, you know, have come to a clinic with my students and I that couldn't talk. We call that nonverbal. They were having a lot of challenges with being in any environment other than their home. And, you know, we really worked with the parent to show them that even this child that is young, that doesn't have words, can be part of this process by showing us what they enjoy, what they respond to. And then we can use things like pictures to help them communicate. Small, basic changes in the beginning could really set the tone and allow the parent and that therapist, that practitioner, to work closely together.
So by showing them the pictures, it enables the parent and the therapist working with them to understand that the child understands but is not able to communicate.
Exactly.
And that is the important thing, to recognize the child's intelligence, because sometimes if the child is delayed in speech, in communicating, there's a question about, is this child okay? Does that child need more support? And we're going to talk more about how to help and understand some of the self-regulation exercises that Dr. Gibbs has provided in her wonderful book, Self-Regulation and Mindfulness, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And my guest this evening is Dr. Varisha Gibbs, who's written a very interesting book called Self-Regulation and Mindfulness for Children with ADHD, Autism Spectrum Disorders, and Sensory Processing Disorders. And we're going to talk about some examples that you've seen where children have been or have had difficulty and have been helped in the school environment by people who are aware of some of your methods.
Yes. So recently I've worked with a child that was school-aged, and he was having a lot of challenges within the classroom setting. And when I say challenges, I mean, some aggressive behaviors, not following directions, leaving the classroom, having challenges with his peers. And, of course, that's a huge disruption for the classroom as well as for the parents when you get frequent phone calls from the school about your child's negative behavior. And so for him, I really had to delve into why he was reacting in a way that he was. And I want to take a moment, Ellie, to really delve into reaction versus responding.
Very good.
And, you know, when you think about a reaction, an example for us would be, you know, driving in your car and someone cuts you off and then, you know, you get pretty angry and maybe you say something out loud that you're not proud of. that would be a reaction. And then perhaps you have your children in the back seat and then you realize, okay, that wasn't great, you know, that I perhaps said that in front of them. And so you're able to then make sense of it. And perhaps if you had more time, you would have had a better response. Whereas, you know, the response allows you to get your brain involved in this process. Well, reactions really are what I would call brainstem levels. Like, before you even get to that brain, there's this piece that's between your spinal cord and your brain that is the brainstem that allows us to have basic reactions that are there for survival. They help us to be able to interact with our environment, have quick responses, and to know what we need in terms of eating, breathing, drinking, et cetera. Now, the child that I'm talking about, he had a lot of reactions. And so, you know, the teachers would express things in a way that perhaps he was making poor choices. And my piece, you know, my role with them was really to give them education on the fact that he's not really making a choice or a decision when he's having these reactions. And we want him to be able to respond, but first we need to tackle what's going on in his body to allow him to have access to his brain. Because in those moments, believe me, he's not having access to, you know, that front part of the brain that helps you to be able to respond appropriately. And so I started with education, you know, with everyone involved, and I also provided them some of the techniques from the book, and one of them is what I call a SAM box, meaning self-regulation and mindfulness box. And inside of the box, there were a few different things in there, such as a pinwheel for him to blow. You know, those old-fashioned pinwheels when you blow,
pinwheels, right.
The colors go around.
Mm-hmm.
And something for, you know, his ears, music. He loved drumming and upbeat music that met his needs for his body. Stress ball, just various things that we discovered that he responded well to. One of the things I realized that he really reacted well to was touch. And so anything that had to do with different textures or a massage or to the skin, he really responded well to. And so providing him with those items in a small box that was readily available for them was one thing that allowed him to have those breaks, if you will, throughout his day so that he can have his sensory needs met. The other part of that for him was acknowledging the root causes of why some of our children respond in this way. And so I guess, Ellie, I should say that, you know, I mentioned before that I don't want parents to feel guilt of why their child is responding in this way, but I do have to add a little caveat to that in terms of what we call trauma. Because I realized over the years that a lot of the children that I worked with that we were identifying had sensory processing dysfunction also had trauma, childhood trauma and complex trauma. And these are events that, you know, are throughout the child's life or maybe happened early on in their life.
Can you give us an example of a trauma that might have had an impact?
Yes. So one child in particular was actually adopted from a foreign country. And in that country, they actually discouraged touch and caressing of the baby because they didn't want the babies in the orphanage to get too attached to one individual. And so that is actually trauma on the nervous system, whereas the system doesn't fine-tune itself in a way that it should. Another form of trauma would be actually during you know, carrying the baby, a parent that is using substances, you know, drugs, while carrying a baby. You could have had a baby with a traumatic delivery, or a child that is experiencing poverty or witnessing domestic abuse from their parents, or even violence in a neighborhood. So there's various levels of trauma that could occur. And for some children, it's constant. You know, they may be in foster care moving from one environment to the next, or they may experience, a lack of support in the household. And so those forms of trauma actually impede upon the neural development.
So how do you help the child who is going through some of these traumas?
So back to my example of the child that we realized actually enjoyed touch, or what we would call tactile activities, the reasoning, and this is obviously it's all theory, but the reasoning I thought behind it was perhaps as an infant and as, a toddler, that touch was lacking. You know, when you're this child's particular situation wasn't stable and didn't have the family support at an early age. And so the natural things that would happen with us with touch and hugging and showing affection was absent for him. And so when the body got, that type of stimulation in a very structured way, he really enjoyed that. But unfortunately, because his system wasn't wired in that way, a push or a shove in the hallway at school could really set him off. And so when it was unexpected, his body didn't quite know what to do with that information. So our job was to kind of just give him more of that stimulation, more and more of it, in a way that he enjoyed, to then desensitize him to that. And then the mindfulness piece of the book, when I talk about self-regulation and mindfulness, is allowing that child to be present and to be aware of what's going on with their body in the moment. And so teaching him about how that feels, how your body feels, and how you can react.
So what you're saying is that that generally, when this kind of incident happens, let's say he's pushed in the hall or somebody bumps into him and he becomes reactive, what you're teaching him is to own his feelings, yes, about what's going on in his body, and to become aware of what's going on in his body so that he can make the appropriate response as opposed to reacting.
Exactly. And, some of our children may be too young for these lessons, but for this child in particular, he's old enough that we can have these conversations. And when you talk to him about, this is a reaction, and you're actually allowing that emotional part of your brain to take over. I call it like our little chihuahua, uh-huh, that's barking in the background. And this little tiny dog is really loud, and you're allowing it to take control over you, where you actually are bigger, you're stronger, and you have the ability to make sense of things, and you can respond. And so the book talks about using, there's a story in there that's similar to the child that I'm talking about, where you can actually use activities for that child to care for something so that they can understand, what that means.
I think there was a wonderful story about a teacher who was teaching his one of his youngsters in his class the difference between reacting and responding. And what he did, as you point out in your book, was to help that child develop a garden,
yes,
so that he could watch it grow and to become responsive and to see that he could not urge the garden to grow. He couldn't yell at it. He couldn't shake the box wherever it was. He had to be patient. And as he did that, he learned to appreciate the appearance of the garden growing, even after he was maybe even becoming a little impatient. But he grew to understand,
right,
the difference between a reaction and a response. And in order to have a garden, he had to be responsive and not reactive. That was a beautiful story.
Thank you. And I think a good point in that story as well was that the teacher expressed to the child that he, too, at the beginning of making his own garden, was frustrated and almost wanted to give up, and he taught him that these, responses in our body, these reactions, in our body are natural, but it's what we do with them, and we need to take charge and have a response. But that symbolic piece of having a garden, sometimes having that visual example is better than just talking to a child.
I thought that was a beautiful example, that garden, on how to learn to be responsive as, mm-hmm, you watch that garden grow. I thought that was beautiful, and I thought the teacher handled it beautifully.
Yeah.
So So what we really need to know and understand as parents and as teachers is that some of the behavior that we see has to be looked at more holistically.
Yes.
And we as teachers and as parents, we have to become aware of becoming responsive rather than reactive.
Exactly, yes. And there's a piece in the book that talks about reciprocal regulation. And we put a lot of the, a lot of the pressure on the child. But we're all involved in this. And so we actually will react based upon how the child is reacting. So we actually have to look at ourselves as well and understand that this reciprocal reaction will continue. If the child is having challenges and then you come in trying to assist, and then you too have a challenge, you feel frustration, and your heart rate will increase, that child will then respond off of you and vice versa.
So we need as parents to become aware of our own quote-unquote reaction and help teach ourselves to become responsive rather than reactive so that we can be helpful to our children.
Yes,
and not and also to help them want to grow and not have them feel guilty that they're not behaving in the special way that we want and need them to behave.
Right.
And be accepting of their differences.
Yes. I think a piece of that is also validation, to validate what the child is feeling, because those feelings in their body are real. Even if you believe they're overreacting or they should be behaving in a certain manner, and that could be very frustrating for a parent. I have two children of my own, so I had my moments,
Of course.
We understand, but the mindfulness piece of it is practicing being in the moment. So I often say stop, feel, and think.
Thank you, Dr. Gibbs, author of Self-Regulation and Mindfulness, for helping us to take charge of our lives by writing a book with hands-on activities, step-by-step exercises, coloring pages, and worksheets to help us work with our children as parents and teachers to help them take charge of their lives. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.